United States against Brewer is the next case for argument this morning. Mr. Reinhart.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Eric Reinhart, and I represent the defendant appellate, Curtis Brewer. This direct appeal of Mr. Brewer's conviction is based on the simple but fundamental proposition of federal criminal law. A defendant cannot be convicted of a crime for which he was not indicted. Mr. Brewer was not indicted for possession of cocaine base, and possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver is not such an offense that allows a conviction for possession of cocaine base as a lesser-included offense. The government's innovative Apprendi argument, asking this court to expand the elements of 21 U.S.C. 841, must be rejected because Apprendi altered neither the grand jury clause, the elements test articulated by the United States in Schmuck, or the elements of a single federal offense. Possession of cocaine base is not a lesser-included offense of possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver. This is clear from an application of the elements test. The elements test states that an offense can be a lesser-included offense if it is a subset of the elements of the proposed greater offense. In this case, the proposed greater offense is possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver. The crime that Mr. Brewer was convicted of, was possession of cocaine base. There's an extra element. That is, that the controlled substance be cocaine base. This position was accepted by this court in United States v. Hill in 1999. In that case, the court expressly said that possession of cocaine base is an extra element, and therefore possession of cocaine base would not be a lesser-included offense of the proposed greater crime.
How would you charge this case if you were the prosecutor?
Well, I think...
Without a question... He's possessing, as a factual matter, possessing more than 5 grams of crack.
Right. I don't know. We don't know, Your Honor, why that was not in the indictment. All we have is the indictment from the grand jury. Twice the grand jury considered the events of May 9, 2000, and twice they refused to return an indictment for, or we don't know, but twice they did not return an indictment for possession of cocaine base. We don't know if the government made some sort of legal, tactical, or strategic decision. There may have been a political decision concerning charging people with possession of cocaine base. There is, of course, political and legal debate about the different treatment between cocaine base and powder cocaine. We simply don't know, Your Honor, why that was not included in the indictment. But we shouldn't have to speculate. The only thing we have from that grand jury is the indictment. And the indictment does not include any offense for possession of cocaine base. The decision in Hill, as well as in the D.C. 5th and 11th circuits, makes sense in light of the structure. In light of the structure of the statute, 21 U.S.C. 841A sets out the elements of the offense: possession of a controlled substance with intent to distribute it. 841B sets forth the penalties provision. Now, to preserve this conviction, the government needs to state what the greater crime would be. And the question for them is, what is this greater crime? In their brief in the lower court, and even before this court, they talk about a crime that's called possession of 50 grams or more of cocaine base with intent to distribute. Well, that's not a crime. The crime that Congress defined is possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver. And this year, this court said in Martinez that you could have a conviction for 21 U.S.C. 841 without any type of drug being alleged. This court said, all that 841A requires is that a defendant knowingly possess a controlled substance. Drug type is not specified and therefore not an element of 841. Therefore, the government's argument that possession of cocaine base is a lesser included offense because cocaine base was stated in the indictment cannot stand.
What did the indictment say about cocaine base?
The indictment said, the second indictment, Your Honor, said that the defendant knowingly possessed a controlled substance, to wit, cocaine base.
And that's not enough of a reference to have a lesser included offense?
No, Your Honor. No, because the statute that he was indicted for was 21 U.S.C. 841. The indictment doesn't mention the possession of cocaine base statute, which is a separate offense, 21 U.S.C. 844, the third sentence.
Well, that's why I asked you how you'd charge this case.
Well, I would have...
It under both statutes. Just have the exact same indictment and allege that it violated two separate sections of the code.
Well, I might have alleged that it violated two separate statutes, 21 U.S.C. 841 and 21 U.S.C. 844.
Right.
Well, I might do that, but and perhaps the grand jury was presented with that possibility. We don't know.
Well, we know the grand jury wasn't even thinking about things like this. Was that the prosecutor was thinking of when he went?
Well, that's exactly right, Your Honor. And if the prosecutor did present it, if the prosecutor refused to present it, they shouldn't be able to avoid that decision now and try to shoehorn in a conviction for the other offense. You're right, Your Honor. It was led by the prosecutor, but we don't know what the prosecutor was thinking, and we don't know what the prosecutor presented. As I said, it may have been a variety of strategic, tactical, or even political decisions. It may have been a political decision that the U.S. attorney made. Any amendment of an indictment is reversible per se, as the U.S. Supreme Court said in Sterone. The government, in this case, the government impermissibly expanded the basis of the conviction when it asked that the court enter a conviction for possession of cocaine base. Now, the government's basic argument comes down, I think, to Apprendi. They tacitly concede that without Apprendi, Mr. Brewer's conviction would have to be overturned. But no court has ever applied Apprendi like this. There's not a single published opinion that suggests that Apprendi expanded the elements of any crime. As a matter of fact, this court has said that Apprendi did not...
There are published opinions that so hold.
Well, Your Honor...
Only some by district courts, but one by a panel of the Ninth Circuit. It was, however, overruled en banc.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And there was the Cotton case in the Fourth Circuit, which the Supreme Court reversed. So there are published opinions that do it. It's not the prevailing law, though.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I apologize. Apprendi is about allocating the decision making authority on the issue when the penalty can be greater than the maximum, and the fact that type and quantity would have to be alleged in some cases does not make it an element of 21 U.S.C. 841. And I think that's the government's basic argument. The fact that it must be alleged in some cases suddenly means that it's an element of the statute. But of course, this court has said that you don't need to allege drug type or drug quantity in an indictment to have a conviction for 21 U.S.C. 841. And I think that the government's position in the end would mean that in every case, drug type and drug quantity would have to be alleged in 21 U.S.C. 841, even when they didn't seek to go over the statutory maximum.
The odd thing about this case is the district judge would have found the defendant guilty of the charged offense. Probably enough evidence to support that. You'd be arguing it was clearly erroneous on appeal, but there was a lot of crack in the house. He was in the house. He's caught outside with 8 grams or something in a bag in his mouth. So...
Well,
this seems like a sort of a strange situation here.
Well, the trial court specifically said that there was not enough evidence on the intent prong. That's what he held, and that's why there was an acquittal of the greater offense. So I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Reinhart. Mr. Jean-Pietro.
May it please the Court, Assistant United States Attorney Gordon Giampietro on behalf of the United States. As the Supreme Court held in Schmuck, the elements test best comports with the ancient doctrine that a defendant should not be held to answer a charge that was not contained in the indictment. This ancient doctrine is not violated in this case with respect to Mr. Brewer's conviction for three simple reasons. First, consistent with this Court's directive, the indictment charges Mr. Brewer with possessing with intent to distribute in excess of 50 grams of crack cocaine. Second, in this case, Mr. Brewer stipulated that, in fact, the substance was crack cocaine and stipulated that it was approximately 8.5 grams. Third, this court 8 years ago in Smith affirmed an 844 conviction on very similar facts. Admittedly, two recent decisions of this court, Stewart and Hill, suggest that the identity of the substance, crack cocaine, may be a lesser included, may be an element under 844. The United States respectfully submits that the reasoning or the statements in Hill and Stewart, and I realize I'm on thin ice here, all members of the panel participated in one of those, either of those cases, are distinguishable on their facts, and that the reference to the identity of the substance is not something that this court has clearly held. For example, in Hill, the basis for the court's ruling was the defendant was not entitled to a lesser included instruction because it was inconsistent with his defense in the case. His defense in the case was, I never possessed anything. So the court, under a deferential standard of review, said it was not error for the court to refuse to give that instruction. In Stewart, the indictment, contrary to this court's directive...
Who cares? We've since made it clear, even after Apprendi, in cases like Brow and Bjorkman and Martinez, that the identity of the drug is not an element of the 841 offense. And then putting that together with Schmuck means that if you have some other offense where the identity of the drug is an element, it can't be a lesser included offense. I mean, isn't that just a logical follow-through?
Your Honor, I believe...
Now, of course, it's a logical follow-through of positions that the government has been arguing for years. Right? It was the government who talked us into this and talked the Supreme Court into it in Schmuck. It was the government who talked us into Brow and Bjorkman. And sometimes you just have to take the bitter with the sweet.
Your Honor, I think you're correct that it was the United States that urged the elements test both to this court and then to the United States Supreme Court. But obviously, I think the rationale behind the elements test needs to have meaning in a constitutional sense. And clearly, what the elements test stands for is the proposition, as I indicated at the beginning of this discussion, the defendant should not be surprised. In this situation, this defendant was charged in an indictment of possessing with intent to distribute more than 50 grams of crack cocaine.
If that's the standard, Schmuck was wrongly decided.
I would submit, Your Honor, the two crimes
because
that were...
What was going on in Schmuck, the defendant perfectly well understood, and it was, of course, the defendant who asked for the lesser-included offense instruction. And if one says that Schmuck is a case only when the defendant is being surprised, then it sounds like the defendant can always waive the benefits. But that's not right. That was the government's whole point in Schmuck.
You're right. You're correct, Your Honor. I think the elements test is a two-way street. But I think with respect to Mr. Brewer's argument today, we're looking at it from his perspective. Is there any surprise to Mr. Brewer with respect to the
that's
conviction?
That's not the standard, though. That was the very ground rejected in Schmuck. That was what the dissenters argued in Schmuck.
Let me ask you the same thing I asked Mr. Reiner. Now that you know all the trouble that's been created here, how would you charge this case if you were starting with?
Your Honor, I think that we would be forced to do as you indicated. We would have to charge two counts, much to the government's prejudice, because as Your Honor knows...
Why is it to the government's prejudice?
Well...
You said all the drugs in the house, there was possession with intent to deliver, and as to the stuff that he had in his mouth, it was possession of crack cocaine.
Your Honor, the prejudice to the government is simply this. Ordinarily, under Rule 31C, the government will wait until all the evidence comes in to decide whether or not the evidence is such that they want to take a chance and allow the jury, under a lesser included, to convict of that lesser included offense. Here, we have to present in the indictment both the greater and the lesser, and I believe that is the government's prejudice. Because
you mean for the same crime or two separate ones? As judge?
Just separate offenses.
That's correct, but nonetheless, the government would have to present the indictment to the jury, and they would hear arguments on, they would be instructed on both offenses.
Well, in this one, as Judge Evans just explained, that you could have two. One, what's in his mouth, possession, what's in the house, with intent to distribute. Now, I don't, obviously the logic is that if you've got an indictment for 50 grams of cocaine base, then and possession with intent to distribute, well, gee, isn't it a lesser included offense to say, well, he must have possessed it anyway? and that rings logically, but it doesn't seem to fit with the case law, and that's what I have the problem.
I understand that, Your Honor, and I think...
It could be the first time a defendant wins with an Apprendi argument.
Your Honor, with respect to that issue about 2106 and what the court could order on remand, in preparing for this argument, I considered the fact that there may in fact be some sort of double jeopardy issue with respect to a conviction for the lesser included on remand. However, I do not believe well, in the sense that, Your Honor, for example, if the government were to choose to indict Mr. Brewer tomorrow under 844A, the third, or now it's actually the fourth sentence, there would be no double jeopardy prohibition on doing so. The government has conceded that if, in fact, Mr. Brewer were to go back to the district court and ask for a conviction on the first sentence of 844 and would waive any potential double jeopardy problem because it is a lesser included and he has already been acquitted of the greater offense, the government would acquiesce in that. That is my point with respect.
Now I'm completely lost.
Your Honor, we have an acquittal of the greater offense.
If he's going to be convicted on remand of the real lesser included offense using the elements approach, that offense is simple possession of an unnamed drug under 841, not under 844.
It would be simple possession under 844, Your Honor. It would be the first sentence of 844, which would be the lesser included of 841. And I believe that there may be a double jeopardy concern because he has already been acquitted of the greater offense. If I am wrong in that respect...
It's no more a double jeopardy problem if it's done on remand than when it's done by the district judge in the first place.
Your Honor, I believe in this case it would be done after a judgment of conviction, after a judgment of acquittal. Mr. Brewer was acquitted of the greater offense under 841. Notwithstanding that concern, which may not be a concern, Your Honor, as we've indicated in our briefs, we would acquiesce in such a result if it's perfectly consistent with the double jeopardy clause, as Your Honor has indicated. Having said that, I do think it's important to point out that the result of this case is that either than charging this as two separate counts in one indictment, the government, to the defendant's detriment, could simply try him under 841, lose, and indict him under 844 if it in fact is not a lesser included. And I don't believe that would be something that would be to the benefit of the defense. For all these reasons, I would ask that the conviction of Mr. Brewer be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Reinhart?
First of all, Mr. Brewer's position is that it's not a lesser-included offense, so the double jeopardy problem doesn't seem to be there. I would also point out that the government didn't really argue the double jeopardy position in its response. The notice problem, Your Honor, is correct that it's not the standard.
It's not very common for prosecutors to argue double jeopardy.
No. No.
Usually an affirmative defense raised by defendants.
That's correct, Your Honor. As for the notice point, Your Honor was correct that that's not the standard, and Mr. Lang even stated in his brief below, the defendant would not have conceded the possession or the nature of the substance had he known that the government would make an end run for a conviction after the defendant was acquitted. So there was a problem, I think, with notice in this case, Your Honor. For all the reasons that I've stated, Your Honor, we'd ask that this court to remand the case to the Eastern District of Wisconsin and direct that court to enter a conviction for the true lesser-included offense, simple possession of a controlled substance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.